Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast, where each week we talk about four rhythms that help you reduce stress and anxiety and take charge of your emotional health. Rest, restore, connect, create.
These ideas come from Rebecca's best-selling book, Rhythms of Renewal, Trading Stress and Anxiety for a Life of Peace and Purpose. So grab your copy, invite your friends, and let's live in rhythm.
Welcome back. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe. And you guys have been great this week. We're hearing so much feedback from the conversations Rebecca and I got to have last week, really regarding this part of our life that some of you knew about, but right. It seems like many of you didn't, which is the work we do with Q Ideas and our Culture Summit that's coming up next week, April 28th and 29th. And so thank you for your feedback. Thanks for caring.
Yeah.
We care a lot about these things, but we're not always sure how many other people do.
Well, I think a lot of people care. They just don't know where to go. And so I hope that was a resource for you, just giving you some of snippets of content that we are going to deeper dive together next week. And so if you still want to join us virtually, just make sure you go to qideas.org/2022. And that's 2022. And enter the code RFL20 to get 20% off.
Yeah, and if you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to last week's episode. Take a few minutes where Rebecca and I explore several of the topics and issues and interviews and conversations we're going to be having with experts next week, all geared towards helping you navigate the culture that we're in, but also the one coming. And that's been always a bent of mine and Rebecca's to try to look around the corner a little bit, try to help us see where things are going culturally and not be afraid of any of it, but with faithfulness, with goodness, look and see where are the signs of life in what we're seeing and how do we get to be a part of what God might be trying to do in the midst of that. And that's what it was all about.
And one of the most inspiring voices that we've had present at Culture Summit over and over again is our guest today. And the topic that he's discussing here, as well as the things that we approach at Culture Summit, is the big tension a lot of us do feel. And it's technology in our homes, in our kids, in our lives. Gabe, you were just telling me something about a pastor, a conversation you had with a pastor.
Yeah, I was talking yesterday with a pastor, local friend of mine, that he was just saying the biggest question he gets about cultural issues, it's not gender, it's not woke race questions or the things that you'd see in the headlines of the news. It's actually, what do I do about my children getting devices? Should I give it to them at 12, 15? How do I do this? Do I keep them off social media? You know, it's all those conversations. And you and I mean, thank goodness we're, it feels like getting closer to the backside of this with a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old where we've really had to navigate that, you know, and we've found our way through that. We feel good about, I guess, where we're at this point. You never know. Every day it could change. But maybe share a little bit about how we've approached it.
Yeah, well, we thought it was really awesome to get our kids iPods when they were like 8, I remember. We're like, oh, they can play their own music. And we got them headphones. And our kids still remind us that, like, Kennedy's like, I think you gave me that when I turned 7 or 8. And we thought we were so cool. And then they lost them and we never replaced them. And we're like, oops, that was actually a mistake. We're going to wait a little bit, actually, on how long. And it was by the time they got to middle school, we were like, yeah, this is probably not a great idea. Let's stall this as long as we possibly can. And Pierce is pretty okay with it. You know, he's kind of like, all about being present anyways. Kennedy, I think sometimes even in girls, just like the peer pressure of other girls being on the phone, like she felt that more in some ways than Pierce did. But regardless, they were troopers about it. And we waited until they were much older. And then Gabe, you've got the brilliant idea from someone else to create a phone contract.
Yeah, created a contract, laying out all the rules, reminding them that we own this phone, not them.
Right.
And that it's a privilege for them
to
have it. And so there's a lot of things that were required of them in order to keep those phones. And I can't tell you how many days or weeks that phone is locked up in our room, in our closet, because they violated one of those rules.
Thankfully, not.
Well, not. I mean, just yesterday, I took away our daughter's phone for a day for a decision she made.
I'm sure
that
she's
violated
look.
The contract. So, I mean, we're still leaning on that.
Rarely does that happen. But one of the caveats on the contract, though, that we threw in, and if you guys want to steal this, you are welcome to, was any level of disrespect, which I feel could actually qualify almost on any given day.
Right. If you really just want to take control of that phone, throw in a little caveat like that. Like, if you look at me the wrong way, you could lose your phone. So I think the point is, we're all looking for answers here. It's not easy. It's the first generation of parents that have had to try to navigate this. Our kids look at us all the time, seeing us use our phones, and they think that's normal. That's normal human behavior to have a phone in your hand, to look down at it all the time. And I think the point is for us as parents is how do we wisely and with great discernment try to navigate the tensions of preparing our children for the world they're going to live in, but also having some really clear boundaries that we know are better for them and better for their development.
You know, interestingly enough, I think years ago, I didn't really have the personal integrity to hold the line with them because I was still very tied to my phone. And it's been more in the last probably three to four years that I'm sometimes like not sure where my phone is, especially if I've like taken a hiatus from social media and just decided to just have less desire to be there. And so in some ways it's good timing because now I can with integrity go like, no, actually you're on too much. In the same ways I heard from them when they were in, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth grade that I was on too much. So I think we get there, but sometimes we need someone in our lives who is seeing it and calling it out. And sometimes the parents are the ones doing that. And sometimes the kids are the ones doing that.
Yeah. And I think today's conversation is going to encourage you because we're talking about that big idea of technology with Andy Crouch. He wrote a book recently called The Life We Are Looking For. And the subtitle I love, Reclaiming Relationship in a Technological World. And we're approaching it from that sense of, hey, there's some great positives here, but let's all be reminded of what these tools are, how they're used, how they're also used against us, and how critical it is for us to think well about this. And Andy will be with us again next week at the Culture Summit. But he's been with us for 16 years, faithfully helping us think about how do we be faithful but applied to the current issues we're dealing with.
Yeah, and what Andy offers, which is not just observations, but real practical tools and resources and ideas that help you cultivate and create a more connected life at home. And he's modeled that in TechWise Family. He's modeling this again with more like punctuation, I think, even in this book. So let's listen in now.
As you know, with Rhythms of Renewal, one of the most important rhythms we begin with is rest. And rest is the moment we get to spend time with God. It's the place where we recenter our priorities and recognize who we are. And that's why we love the Abide Bible. Too often we open our Bibles only to feel distracted or confused and sometimes overwhelmed, if we're even opening our Bibles at all. The Abide Bible is designed to help you truly connect with God's Word by giving you guided practices to experience, understand, and apply Scripture in powerful ways. Whether it's journaling or praying Scripture, contemplating a theme or promise, engaging with God through art, or picturing yourself in the biblical moment, the Abide Bible invites you to experience what it means to abide in Christ. Check out the Abide Bible at startabide.com.
Welcome to the podcast, Andy.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk with you guys.
Yeah, we love talking with you, Andy, and so excited for our audience to get to just hear these conversations because when we always have interacted with you, you've helped us think a little more deeply about what it means to be human and how technology and devices and the lives that we're all living start to chip away at that a bit. And we can almost, over time, start to forget how it's chipping away, and we don't recognize what we've lost. And I think you've always done such a good job of helping us recognize what is it that we've lost and how do we recover it? And it's so hopeful. And so your new book, The Life We're Looking For, is all about that. And I'm excited about the theme, Reclaiming Relationship in a Technological World, because ultimately, that's what this is about, is not letting technology start to replace how God's designed us to function with one another. And as you've written so much about these topics, what led you to this particular project where you wanted to lay out a new vision, a future vision for what life ought to look like?
Yeah, I think it was a couple things. One was that I had written a book about technology and family life called The TechWise Family, and it's sort of a small book, and I wrote it relatively quickly, and it has outsold all my other books. So I didn't really think of it as a life-defining project, but there was such, it revealed what we all already kind of knew. There's such hunger for help with this stuff. But that book is, it's very tactical in a way and targeted at family life. And, you know, our own kids, my kids are out of the house now. We don't have children at home. We aren't making those decisions that so many families do have to make. So I wanted to write a book that was about the bigger picture and that would apply kind of to all of us, no matter what stage of life we're in, and go beyond just life in the home, because we're clearly seeing in so many dimensions, the kind of long-term societal effects of the century-long pursuit of technology as the thing that would make our lives better. And it has certainly improved our lives in some ways, but there's clearly something not right. And so that's what this book is kind of taking the bigger picture
on. Right. And as you're seeing the erosion of home, that is spilling out into a cultural narrative of, you know, if you have that breakdown in something so finite as how you engage your device and how you connect within the four walls of your home, yeah. If that's breaking down, then how in the world do you model something differently at work or in your community or civic life? Yes. And then all of a sudden it gets to this broad sweeping brush of, you know, now statistics have changed and we almost can't keep up with the data. It's changing so rapidly. There's so many wonderful topics in your book, and I love that you're getting back up 30,000 feet to the ideas and the concepts of how this began and why are we here. And I'd like to just hone in on a chapter that you call the superpower zone, how we trade personhood for effortless power. And man, that's a provocative thought, but let's jump into that. Give us a synopsis of what you mean by that.
Yeah, so let's start with what we actually are made to be and what we actually are. And one way to think about it is by using this idea from the Hebrew Bible. It predates the Christian Bible, but Jesus picks up on it, and it's called the Shema Israel. It's this very important text in Jewish life. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is God, the Lord alone. And then it says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, in essence. And that's how Jesus frames it when he's asked, what's the greatest commandment? So this is like the most important thing to know about us is we're designed for love, first of all, and we're designed to do that in these dimensions of what I would call full personhood, heart, soul, mind, strength. What has happened as technology started to work in the way that it works is it gives us ways to take shortcuts around all four of those qualities of being human. Mm. So, you know, the most obvious is strength. Obviously, using what we learned through physics and chemistry and all this stuff, we now can apply strength in the world without any bodily effort. And that sounds awesome. Like, wow, I can get things done without having to exert myself, without fatigue, right? Without labor. And I'm sure it certainly has some benefits. But what that actually does to our bodies is actually not very good, right? Because we are now living with the first non-infectious public health crisis in history. So I know we all think about COVID-19, but this pandemic is a blip compared to metabolic syndrome, which is diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, which all kind of go together, and tending to also excess weight. And all these are the result of the inactivity of the modern world. It's not good for our bodies to not use our strength. Now, it's certainly good that people don't have to work themselves to the bone, or, you know, that there are alternatives to manual labor in some sectors and spheres. But it's not good that I could easily spend this whole day sitting in the chair I am sitting in right now and looking at a screen and feeling very productive. And then that gets to why do we do it then? I know it's not actually good for my body to do that, but I get in what I call in this book the superpower zone, which is where with seemingly little effort, I am getting all kinds of things done. I am like pounding through email. I'm reading all these different things online. I'm watching all this stuff. I'm creating. I'm sending it into the world with no exercise of my strength. And that's not actually good for me as a person. And I actually think we could talk more about it if we had lots of time. I actually think on the heart level, the emotional life that we have, and technology also has provided ways to kind of hijack our emotions and stimulate and soothe our emotions. The mental level, how we actually cognitively engage with the world. And then our soul maybe is the worst hit of all. And in all these areas, we now have a kind of superpower option that feels very efficacious. Like, I'm really getting something done. And in fact, you are dwindling as a person. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. It's a thousand percent.
It's makes a counterfeit sense. For what God really designed for us to do. I mean, I find it interesting over the last couple of years how much the pandemic forced people back into some rhythms that they had lost touch with. And you see a lot of people getting involved in gardening. And we talked a lot about those rhythms on this podcast and how much people are using their hands again. And they're finding like exactly. This joy in it that they didn't realize they were even missing. But when you start to work outside, or, you know, in my case, whatever, last weekend, cleaning the chicken coop. I mean, it's a disgusting job, and it's not fun. But I feel so good when I'm complete that
and
job.
And the chickens are very happy.
Or when I have to replace, you know, a wood shelf and sort of do a little carpentry. And there's those kinds of things that I know we've lost. And in our tech world, it seems like that's the trajectory, is like, yeah, do less manual labor, let AI start to do the work for you. But I feel like the Christian vision is maybe hearkening us back to something different.
And it calls us to even this idea of, you know, even when you have to lay in a hospital bed and you don't move, what do you get? You get bed sores, you get infections,
my goodness,
just by being inactive. This idea of being sedentary, it's like a river was never meant to be sedentary.
Wow.
It grows stagnant, and then all of a sudden it's not healthy. The water's toxic, right? If our bodies were made to move, you know, to actually move. I was talking about, you know, present your body as a living sacrifice. It's not it's not that was a wonderful metaphor. You know, it's like, let's write that down. Let's ponder. How can we be a living sacrifice in our brain? But it's like, no, our bodies, I was like, I remember talking about this once. Just like, what do you think that actually means? Our bodies are a living sacrifice. How are we sacrificing physically in our bodies today? And, and it's just, it's so fascinating to me. And that's why in the winter, it's almost more tempting to be sedentary. It's like, because your body wants to slow down, it wants rest, but that's the assumption that it actually worked really hard the other three seasons so that you would be ready for a long winter's nap.
Exactly. Oh, that's so good.
Keep sharing with us a little bit more here, though, because you dig into this idea of robots. And I know at the Q Ideas events, culture summits, we've talked a lot about cyborgs and the future of where tech seems to be going. Elon Musk obviously leading a lot of the imagination for people around these types of things. And you can start to see where humans will start to adopt more technology to make life better, you know, essentially. But you say the next tech revolution will succeed, but it will also fail. And I want to know, how do you see it failing? I think we can all see how it might succeed.
It might succeed, yeah.
But what do you see going wrong with it?
Well, I think we already know, because we already have robots, we already have incredibly intelligent devices that surround us and make all kinds of things possible for us. And the big question is there some like dramatic change on the horizon? No, I don't mean like my Roomba robot. I have a Roomba vacuum, right? That's a robot by any measure. My dishwasher, actually, even though it doesn't move around and doesn't look like a person, it still operates by all the principles of robotics, cybernetics, automaticity, autonomy, all that stuff. We already have lots of this in our lives. And the dream is, well, it's okay. I mean, you know, the Roomba does like an 80% good job of vacuuming my house. but we're talking about like robots that will do things for us, like really do things for us. And then we'll really feel like we have superpowers. That's the constant horizon by which technology offers itself as progress. My argument, which I try to kind of make the case fully in the book in a short amount of time, is actually, we already crossed the threshold into a world where computers do a lot of things for us, and we're very dependent on them. But we know that it's actually not, we do not live a transformed existence, for better or for worse, right? We are amazingly still human. And what our relationships are like, what our frustrations are like. And in the book, I call this scenario boring robots. So basically once robots actually, before robots arrive, they sound very exciting. But once they actually arrive, they're very boring. That is, they don't really change our lives. So technology is going to succeed in the sense that we're going to keep getting better and better iterations of all kinds of interventions, you know, kind of electronic interventions in our world. And we might even get things like self-driving cars, though. I think actually that's way less likely than a lot of people thought even just a couple of years ago. And we're starting to, the whole field is feeling that right now. But technology is going to fail in the sense that this dream that we have, that on the other side of this transition, there's just going to be this glorious relief from burden, relief from effort, relief from the frustrations of being human. That is never going to happen. And actually, and this is the real shadow side of this, I mean, you mentioned how easy it is to go through life without doing physical labor. And that is true for many of us, but actually it's not by any means true of everyone, every human being. In fact, we're creating, and we sort of saw this vividly illustrated in the pandemic, but you know, the divide, as N.S. Lyons has called it, between the virtuals and the physicals, the people who actually can live pretty well on lockdown because they've got their screens and their screens somehow magically continue to make money. But we rely on all these other human beings who actually are being forced to do less and less human forms of manual labor. That is to say, they're now supervised by computers. The Amazon driver who shows up at my door is literally every step is measured, tracked, and directed by not a person, not even a boss or a supervisor, but a computational algorithm. And they're being pressed to the absolute limits of their physical capacity, doing manual labor that's very one-dimensional. There's no heart to it, no soul to it, no mind to it. So they're being forced to just be strength. And I actually think the end game of this, that we have to an astonishing extent already, is that we, to get that magical world where the robots seem to work for us, actually requires a whole bunch of human beings to act almost like slaves did in the ancient world, which is the manual labor that stays out of sight and gets things done for the powerful and privileged. Wow. And if we're honest, we're in many, many ways already there. So this dream, and we want that superpower so much, we will just avert our eyes. Hmm. I mean, Amazon, in my neighborhood, most of the deliveries happen like before 7 a.m. and after 9 p.m. now. So that I never have to even think about the persons who are being sent on these routes, these delivery routes. I don't even have to interact with them in the slightest way. And that's a lovely superpower to have.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's some people, you know, we're mutual friends with Kevin Kelly out at co-founder of Wired Magazine. And I was talking with him the other day about some of this future. And some people see that future as being good for humans, because the more AI starts to do things for us, and I think more of the terms of when Amazon starts to deliver via drone, and so no longer are people delivering, but something else is delivering, it forces humans to contemplate what's truly unique about them. And in his view, I believe I'm stating it correctly, that means we start to allow machines and AI to do things that maybe we shouldn't be spending our time doing. But I see that as kind of countering a real counter to what you're suggesting, is that we're made to be human. We're creatures. We have this physical elements to ourselves that we're meant to strain. We're meant to work.
Yes.
We're not just meant to sit back. And I could see that debate becoming the debate of the age. Like, what are humans meant to do? I mean, that is the question of this decade for
right.
sure. What does it mean to be
right.
human?
Well, and that leads me to my question then. If drones are delivering everything from Chick-fil-A to whatever we order on Amazon, then what are humans doing? You know, ultimately, what is the population
doing? They're hanging
doing?
Out in the metaverse, right, Andy?
I mean,
we're happy about it.
We are in a rabbit hole, but seriously.
Ultimate superpower zone.
Yeah, because how long can you stay? I mean, how long can you even stay in a superpower zone without you lose meaning and purpose, right? Because what are you significantly contributing outside of pushing buttons?
Wow. Yes. And it doesn't, but see, here's the thing. When you're in that zone, it doesn't actually matter to you, because the rewards of that feeling, this is why it's so hard to get your 10-year-old to come down to dinner when they're in the middle of a video game, because the video game is a superpower zone. Like if you're playing FIFA football or whatever, you are experiencing like the life of one of the top 0.01% athletes in the world. You're like in the midst of this incredibly immersive environment where you can make things happen. Now that kid playing that game, if they actually go out and play soccer in the backyard, it's way less satisfying, right? When you leave the superpower zone and actually learn to play soccer, even if you made it all the way to the professional level, it's not as easy and not as satisfying as in the sort of immediate rewards as FIFA football video game. And to have that interrupted and be invited, hey, come into the real world where we have dinner ready and we have a conversation to have, and your brother and sister are here and your parents are here and maybe a guest is here. Like, that is way less appealing. And it doesn't really matter that there is no real football field I'm on, that it's just a game. It's so satisfying for what part of us wants as human. And I think this is what I would be concerned about with Kevin's idea. Of course, theoretically, and this speculation goes back to Aristotle, Socrates, there's versions of this in the dialogues of Socrates where they think about, and Aristotle explicitly said, wow, if you could get a harp that would play itself. You wouldn't need a slave to play the harp anymore, right? So he's already dreaming of robots. And it's very interesting. He dreams of it in terms of what slaves do. And so there's been this idea all along, oh, if we could finally just rid ourselves of the burdens of human life and the labor of human life of all kinds, then we'd have time to really think about what we want and who we want to be. But I think that's missing two things. One is it's very easy to be deceived about what you want because right now I want potato chips or Chick-fil-A for that matter. That's not necessarily what's best for me in the long run, right? I don't want to clean out the chicken coop right now. And at any given moment, I don't want to clean out the chicken coop. So first I can be very deceived about what I want.
Right.
And the other is I think we really underestimate how addictive and immediately satisfying the rewards of the false alternative feel. So you are not going to be in a situation where you have leisure for contemplation of the true purpose of your life. You are actually going to be plugged into a constant hit of dopamine. and you will not, you'll be literally living life under the influence in that metaverse. And you will not be able to even clear your mind enough to realize, I'm desperately unhappy. I'm not actually engaging in neighbor love. I'm detaching myself from all the people who are still working because even those drones have to be loaded by human beings at some point. And I'm more and more cut off from the reality I'm called to love with my heart, soul, mind, and strength.
Yeah. And neuroscience tells us that you can wear out those pleasure centers of your brain through these chronic dopamine hits to the point of where it's just never going to be enough. And what was satisfactory to you, you know, with like 30 minutes of Xbox now needs to be, you know, 8 hours of Xbox. Trust me, I don't clearly know the right language. But then it's not just VR or AR. It needs to now be VR. And then why would you go to church in a room when you can be in a dark room with, you know, an Oculus on your head and lifting your hands
so cool
in worship. I have a few opinions about this. It's like, where does it end? Because we all know, even in celebrity culture, you can have all the fame and all the dopamine all day long, and you can still be very lonely and sad and depressed. And you were a superhuman. You were. Many people have had this story.
Wow.
And so it still doesn't end. The dopamine just doesn't last forever, and you're just going to – that high has to be higher every time. And then another thing you said that kind of prompted me was when you said, well, we just want to rid ourselves of all the work so we can then ask the question, what do we want to do? Which then just veers us right off the biblical worldview because we were never created to govern ourselves or do what we want. It's full of sacrifice and surrender and suffering and submission. So do you find that those are hard topics for people to even engage anymore? Like just real suffering in, you know, as part of your glory and your inheritance in Christ is like you get to share in the resurrection and you share in the suffering. And that's just part of being human. Because Christ modeled that, saying, not my will, but yours. I mean, do you find that that's a conversation that just isn't happening anymore?
I think, you know, three answers come to mind, which I can state, and they somewhat contradict each other. First, in the places where Christian faith is thriving, which is not the places where technology is most established as the maker of our world, what we call the developing world, which is a very technologically slanted way of putting it. In the places where it's thriving, people, of course, completely understand what you just said. Like our call is to identify with Christ. It's to die with Christ. And there's a beautiful conversation happening in the global church about this. Now, in the Western world, or the world that mammon has made, the world that technology has made, I even would say when you actually talk with people, it's so clear we know this isn't actually good. This is actually one of the most interesting things. There's a number of fronts on which I feel as a Christian that my neighbors really don't agree with me about what's good and bad for people. But on this topic, I think actually there's this huge sense of dis-ease, unease, dissatisfaction. And and whether people would sign up for the kind of true, the life of full Christ-likeness, like take up your cross and follow me, I don't, you know, maybe not. But people definitely are looking something better. It's so weird. Like, even as we keep like upgrading our superpowers, we keep thinking, this is not it. This is not it. I'm finding out again, this isn't it. The new iPhone is not actually changing my life. But then I would say the third thing is, the place I think those conversations are most not happening is actually in virtual environments. So on Twitter, on in any kind of mediated way, when we're not fully present in the flesh with enough proximity to people to have compassion for them, you say something about suffering and people are like, why are you calling me to emotional labor? Or why are you invalidating my experience?
I haven't heard that.
There's a lot of protest that is actually legitimate, because just to say that over media, like, hey, why don't you just take up your cross? Like that's not a very compassionate thing to say, actually. So there's like judgmentalism and protest and refusal, you know, don't burden me with your vision of what life should be. And that's what happens when you take us out of actual embodied presence and enough formation that we're actually able to listen to the other person and hear, yes, I can imagine how hard it would be for you to care for that child in that situation. But I'm not going to just abandon you and tell you to do it. I'm going to be with you, right? But if I just tweet at you to do it, you're going to push back. Mm. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes
empathy,
sense.
Yeah, empathy, for sure.
I'm going to ask Rebecca, though, at some point when we're having a serious talk, to not make me emotionally labor. That's a new term that I have not used yet.
Thank you, Andy.
Well, everybody listening, The Life We're Looking For is such an important read, not just for you. This is one of those you pull the family around, you read together, you read in a book club, you read with your friends, because it's the kind of book that's going to move all of us to go, are there some decisions we need to make about how we're structuring life, what we're valuing, what we're prioritizing? And I love how the book concludes, because you talk about exiting the empire and helping people start to get this vision that we're not just going to talk about what's wrong with all of this, but there is a vision to move forward. And you do that in a lot of ways. You talk about from devices to instruments, from family to household, from charmed to blessed. Will you just share a little bit about that vision of what is possible when we recover who we were meant to be?
For sure. I actually think it's so within our grasp to choose a different way. And I talk about these three redemptive moves, and I can describe them super briefly. The first is from devices to instruments. So it's not asking for what in the TechWise family I called easy everywhere. It's not asking for superpowers. That's what devices give us, let's say. But there's this other thing called instruments, which can be very high tech. My wife, as you guys know, Catherine, is a physicist. She uses super high technology in her research, but not as a superpower, not as something to replace her or make her life easier. It actually allows her to fully engage heart, soul, mind, strength in the world. And the truth is, your iPhone, your MacBook, your even your Xbox possibly can either be kind of just superpower zone the whole way, or it can actually be an instrument that is used for deep creativity, deep work. There's these devices, we could turn most of them into instruments if we chose to. The second thing is we need a new relational context. And that's where I talk about the role that households play. Most of us live far too alone. And that's even people who have the so-called nuclear family still in their home. But that little unit of parents and children, which is the minority of American homes already, is not enough for the relational context that we need. So we're going to need to rethink ultimately the architecture of our lives and who we invite close enough into our lives that we're truly known, because that's what we're really longing for. And then there's just this very deep question, do I want to do magic or do I want blessing? And so the idea of chasing after the charmed life, I think most things that are hashtag blessed, I know that's become like totally ironic and probably nobody does it straight anymore, but you know, there used to be like, people would be like blessed, hashtag blessed. Almost all that should be labeled hashtag charmed. It's actually about Cinderella. It's about I'm young, I'm beautiful, I'm fortunate. All those things are charms. They go away. And there's this other life that's the blessed life, which is about wrestling. It's about struggle. It is often a journey through pain, but it's a journey beyond that to real healing and freedom. And that comes above all by including in our lives people who are not convenient for us, people who don't give us superpowers, the youngest, the oldest, the least able, the most ill, and building our lives and communities around the care for those people. And that is not a charmed life. You guys live this. You know fully well there's no charm in it, but there is a lot of blessing in it. And we need to rebuild everything we're aiming for, including with our technology, to say, I don't want a charmed life. I want a blessed life.
That's so good. I would love for you to unpack the household concept, because nuclear family has been so put on a pedestal these last, decades. And we all know that individualism just created, a family of dysfunction, because there weren't all these other voices speaking into the children, and the parents are worn out and working two jobs. Nobody has enough margin to actually really nurture well. So what's a vision that you could cast quickly of household for someone who's trying to reengage that in their community or their church or their extended family?
The very first place I would start is actually by asking, maybe the whole question is, how do we extend our family? Like, that phrase extended family usually means kin, whether that's, grandparents or aunts and uncles. So can I arrange my life it all has to happen in increments, one step at a time, but can I make one decision that will put me closer to people outside my nuclear family who I am related to? So just start with your own relations. And then you think, oh, I don't want to be with those people. Because they're complicated. And that's the point. Like, these are the folks, they're going to stick with you probably because your family, yes, it is messy. It's going to force you into spiritual growth you didn't want, emotional health that you didn't really want to pursue. But we start there. But then the question is, how do I extend my family to include other people who may well not have a family of their own? So older people who have outlived most of their relatives. We've got all kinds of kids who don't have parents meaningfully in their lives in various ways. Like, how could they, and you can't care for all of them, but you might be able to open the door to one. And one way that I think about it very practically, in the long run, we actually need to build new kinds of housing that are better for this, that allow families and couples to have certain kinds of privacy, but be meaningfully intertwined. But in the meantime, I would say, who has a key to your house? Add two more keys and think about, who would I want pretty much any time to be able to be part of our family's life, invite them in. So we have three or four people who we have a key code. It's technology. We've got an electronic lock. They have a code, and they know they are welcome to our single family house. And it's just one little step we can do in our setting right now to have other people in our lives beyond just the tightest tiny circle.
Well, I would say that key code allows you to use heart, soul, mind, and strength. So I affirm that key code.
Exactly. It's an instrument.
Yeah, it's an instrument. What a vision, Andy. Thank you for today. I'm going to noodle on a lot of these things we discussed. The community of the unuseful, I could just bawl, just that phrase, because how much we see people as unuseful, because yes. There's nothing that they can, quote unquote, benefit us from, when truly I think our glory is actually on full display when we are serving unuseful people with no strings attached and a real delight in doing so. That's where the maturing actually happens.
Yes.
And I'm not arrived, but I definitely understand, what that walk has been. So thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your work, your faithfulness. We've been, as you know, friends first, but also just fans of your work, and just so thankful for the truth that you put out there and just the prophetic voice that you have. So thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for you guys. Thanks.
Well, I love talking with Andy. I think any of you who had not heard of Andy Crouch before, I'm sure you appreciated the conversation, even this idea of thinking about instruments over devices. I think I'm leaving with that.
Yeah, I'm leaving with, let's continue to hone skills, like actual tangible skills in life that require some discipline and hard work, and then just the embodied presence of being together. There's nothing that will ever compare to that.
And if you like these conversations, just a reminder, next week Rebecca and I will be full force a part of our Culture Summit, April 28th and 29th. I'd encourage you, look at the show notes, go to the link right now, qideas.org/2022. You'll see many of our topics and presenters, even Malcolm Gladwell will be with us, and so many other topics and issues and things that we believe people of faith should be thinking well about. And we're going to talk about climate change. We're talking about the future of how to think about prophecy in our world. So we mix everything you could imagine as a Christian you need to be thinking about. What does the Bible say about these things? What's the world saying? What's the narrative? What am I supposed to believe? And we just want to come alongside and help you get exposure to that. And you can do that at qideas.org/2022 using promo code RFL20 to get 20% off. That'll take your virtual pass down to $79. And you not only get that for those 2 days, you get access to over 20 breakouts and then 30 days worth of on demand where you can go back and watch a session with your kids, a talk like you just heard from Andy, who will be there. You pull your teenagers in, you watch this on your Apple TV, and you have a conversation about it. It's a great way to stir the pot on these important conversations we need to be having with those we love, but we don't always have the right excuse or person to start the conversation. And so we hope that can be a gift to you as we move forward next week. Well, we hope you guys have a wonderful day.